level in your glass. It's a very Polynesian edition of Duty Gamercast. My name is Lang. With me, as always, is Nathan. With us here today is Kyle, proprietor of Imaginary Wars here in Calgary, Alberta.
Howdy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the second time you did that. Yes.
Now, full disclosure, we have been drinking like 50-50 gin punch mixes for an hour, and then we're just like, hey, we should podcast.
Between five of us, it was half a bowl of punch and more than a bottle of gin.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So we've topped up our glasses with gin and punch.
And maraschino cherries.
Maraschino cherries.
I won't promise this episode will be better than episode 100, because I think that is a really hard promise to make. But, hey, at least we'll be as drunk as episode 100.
It's also a fucked up promise to make. Hey, cheers, let's start this shit out. You guys are listening to Jaded Gamercast. It has been one hell of a week. We have all sorts of shit unprepared, as you might suspect, primarily being our listener poll for this week, which I will now absolutely bring up because I had that page prepped. However, in the meantime, Nathan and Kyle will talk about things.
I was going to say, the page you prepped by turning your Wi-Fi off.
Hey, enough of that. You guys should talk about Firestorm Armada.
I was going to talk about the recipe for this punch.
Oh, that's even better, because then I can talk about Firestorm Armada.
So, to make your very own Jada Gamercast approved Polynesian punch, take it away, Kyle.
You take one can of any condensed kind of orange juice you have. Keep it frozen.
Frozen.
Add, 2 liters of ginger ale?
That's right. Actually, if you're going to do 2 liters, because this is a 1-to-1-to-1 recipe.
Ah,
so it's 2 liters of ginger ale, condensed.
Two packages of condensed orange juice and 2 bottles of maraschino cherries. Just pour all that shit in there.
Mix it the fuck up.
And then add as much gin as you want, because the Polynesian punch really masks the taste of the gin.
Not so necessarily.
You just get the hint of gin. There's no alcohol.
I would argue that they're fighting for control. There is no masking going on.
I would say as much gin as you can handle, because I think that's the money winner right there.
Absolutely.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about This Week in Hobby, what we did. I obviously, for anyone who was there and anyone who saw online, I was running a Firestorm Armada tournament at Imaginary Wars, which went very, very well. We'll kind of be talking a little bit about Firestorm Armada later in the episode. But Nathan, what have you been up to?
Nothing. Not a damn thing.
Kyle!
I go in slow motion, so I'm still working on my heavy gear stuff, but I'm working on my second squad.
How's your heavy gear league going?
That has just wrapped up. We were doing a slow grow league of every 3 weeks. We increased the points by 300 points until we all hit tournament level armies, 1,000 points. And that was what I was doing, so that's it for me.
I was going to say, it's really good to see that you got 1,000 points painted over the course of your league, because now that it's wrapped up, you're clearly done.
Obviously, that would have been what would happen. Nathan, stop kicking the goddamn table.
I promise nothing.
Sadly, I get to do things like my paperwork. So no, I'm nowhere near 1,000 points. However, my stuff looks pretty good. I'm pretty pleased, and I'm going to keep moving forward.
Yeah, we saw some pictures on your blog. What's go ahead and throw your blog out there.
My blog is imaginarywars@wordpress.com. We're in the
@wordpress.com.
I believe in gin.
Yeah, lots of gin.
All right. So, obviously, one of the big things that I was trying to do this week was I've been looking at lists a lot recently. Nathan and I were going back and forth earlier in the week, kind of on the idea of either doing a high elf list or doing a chaos dwarves list.
Only because they are retail value the same. Actually, the chaos dwarves were cheaper.
About $100 cheaper than the retail value of what I wanted to do with high elves.
Because when you're shopping welfare, you shop from Forge World where the prices are cheaper.
Where the prices are cheaper than their equivalent.
And
company.
Everybody knows your name. It's weird.
Cheers.
Yay. I was going to say, I'm like, is everyone
I believe
too
on college radio, that's what they call dead air.
Mm. Yeah, I was going to say, is everyone too drunk to catch the reference?
Oh, I caught it, Norm. So, yeah, that was pretty much it for the week. I really didn't do a whole lot of hobbying. I tried to play some games. I was supposed to try to get some Firestorm games in with Scott because he was trying to prep for the tournament.
That's right.
But for the most part, it ended up getting canceled, you know, grown-up shit. Other than that, let's move on to something that we can talk about, which would be the listener poll for last week, which was Will, Games Workshop, FAQ, The Banner of the World Dragon. The 3 options that we gave you guys was, fuck no, that banner is totally balanced, points will be increased, and rules will change. Now, one of the funny things Nathan and I talked about last episode was that our powers of internet prognosticating have slowly degraded to the point where we've kind of been wrong about a lot of shit recently. And for some reason, people listened to us, and we told them to think for themselves, which apparently means go fuck yourself, because virtually everybody, meaning by that half, said, fuck no, the banner is totally balanced. We had another 40% that said the points will be increased, And we had another three people who said the rules will be changed. Now,
that sounds like a threat. Rules will change.
Oh, okay.
It's more like an election promise. I'm running for CEO of Games Workshop, and my first act in power is going to be to close Guantanamo. No. I got it.
Yeah, I think Games Workshop.
You're going to throw American politics into the conversation?
Why not? I'm drunk.
Yes, we cannons. All right, so that was terrible. I really do apologize. Nathan is giving me the cheers with the Dick Nose Cup. So, really, I think what's interesting about this is that a lot of people feel that it's not the worst thing in the world. And I think that the majority of what I've read online, for the most part, is that most people don't think that it's the worst thing in the world. Demons, obviously, it's something that you have to keep in mind. And I was actually speaking with Dwight about one of his lists for the Team OP event coming up here in the next little bit. And he was asking me with his dwarfs list, you know, like, how do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? You know, he was kind of asking me about his list. And one of the things I said to him was, you have to understand that for the most part, you are almost guaranteed to run into a big unit of high elves with the Banner of the World Dragon as allies. Because the way that they have their event built, that's amazing. Why wouldn't you take a big unit of white lions with the world Banner of the World Dragon, right? Like, it's one of those things that makes so much sense, and it's such a good investment for you that it's hard to rationalize trying to build your list any other way.
Well, and especially because what do you need? What do you need to do? You need to get, what, 5 Silver Helms naked, or actually 5 Illyrian Reavers are going to be your cheapest core choice to get the ally requirement out of the way, and that leaves you enough points to get almost 30 White Lions with Banner of the World Dragon. And there you go. Like Bob's your uncle, because you're absolutely right. Why wouldn't you take it? You know, this is a unit that has Magic Resistance 5, for all intents and purposes, because they have the 2+ ward save.
That's right.
But it is also given over to magical attacks and magic weapons, all for the low cost of 50 points.
Yep.
And when you compare that to the Obsidian Lodestone in the rulebook, which is only 45 points, you
for
know...
For MR3.
Yeah, for MR3, it's just like, so for 5 points, I get MR5, and then it also confers over to these other things.
Well, you expect it to
and
be good.
And you also cannot destroy it with something like the high magic level number 5 spell.
That's right.
Because if you put it on a unit standard bearer, he's completely safe from
utterly
any
invulnerable.
Offensive magic.
Utterly, you have to kill every last person in the unit with the exception of the unit champion before that thing is gone.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And you know what? I agree with you there. It's a weird thing. I still think I hold strong to the idea that the points are going to be increased to 75 just going off of what we've seen. What's strange is that Games Workshop, that has generally been very on the ball for their FAQs, are actually kind of falling off here.
Okay, for the record, they have never been on the ball, but it was really
kind
surprising.
Kind of on the ball. I said kind of.
No. But
they,
I mean, when the Tau came out, it was actually really surprising.
They had a 2-month period where they were really fast and reacted quickly for 2 months. So suddenly everyone thought it was them changing, you know, turning over a new leaf. And that's already fallen apart because that takes commitment, and Workshop is not that committed.
Well, that's because they fired the guy that did the FAQs, because as we have said on numerous occasions, when you work for Games Workshop, they are only waiting until they can fire
you. Oh, and they're reminding you about how often they can fire you.
No.
Any
we all know
under
this.
The sun.
Oh, now we got you. Well, we don't like you now that we got you. It's like chasing that girl.
We're so happy that you're here. Now, you've already crossed a line.
Oh, you like me now? I'm done with you. I liked you more when you didn't like me.
No, so what I find is interesting is that the majority of people are actually looking at it from the perspective that that I had, which was that the points will actually just be increased. What I find really interesting about that is that it is, even if it is 25 points more, and only the Dragon Princes can take it, and only a BSB can take it, which means it's slightly more vulnerable, it still fucks up a demon player's day.
Yeah.
And I mean, you and I had talked about this earlier in the week, Nathan, where you had said, like, you've been reading on demon forums, and a lot of what they've been saying is just like, you have one of two options. Just quickly cover those for people.
Okay, so one of them is ridiculous, and it's pointless. So, basically, this is one of those theoretical things where it's like, theoretically, it's possible to destroy a Death Star because the exhaust port is 2 meters wide, the size of a womp rat.
That's impossible, even for a computer.
Thank you. That was the best.
There you go.
Earlier today, Kyle said to me, because his daughter gave me a scroll, and he's like, oh, so Poppy gave you a scroll. I was like, yeah. He's like, well, you're now part of the tribe. I said, just what I always wanted. We both giggled at each other, and I started sucking his dip. It was really, really awesome.
And partly erotic.
Partly erotic. It was limp. That's what I like, though. It's like brushing your teeth with an uncooked sausage.
All right. Anyway, trying to move us...
You sound like my wife.
slightly back on track.
Okay. Anyways, right. Two options. Nathan, go.
All right. So the first option involves so many variables, it's basically impossible. So if the High Elf player puts it on a Battle Standard Bear, also takes a high magic wielding wizard who rolls up the number 5 spell, and the demon player then takes a Tzeentch wizard who rolls up the number 4 spell. This is why I'm like...
No, keep going. I was going to say,
there are so many, variables. Okay. Since the number 4 spell for Tzeentch magic is Glean magic, if he successfully casts it, he has a chance to randomly steal the number 5 spell from the high magic wizard.
That's only
on which would allow him
to...
Yes. And when when cancer is ascending.
I would argue cancer's been sitting for a while, sir.
Then you have the potential to put a wound on the BSB and destroy the banner. But again, you see how ridiculous it is. Like, when people are coming up where it's like, this is a possible counter, and you're just like, but do you have any idea how fucking stupid you sound in even listing it?
I think what's hilarious about it is that at any point during that entire conversation, you just go... Well, yeah, I'll take high magic, but I'm just not going to take the one that deletes magic items.
Yeah. Oh, it's the number 5?
That way you never get it.
I'll trade that for signature. Well, it looks like my counter to the Banner of the World Dragon is over.
Well, I think the fucked up thing about the Banner of the World Dragon is, like you had said, when you math hammer it out, you're losing something between, like, 8 and 9 blood letters, and he's losing 2 white lions. And yeah. it's a fucked up situation that you will never walk away from. Like, you can't even whittle them down.
Yeah. No, I mean, realistically, the other option, which is the one that I would personally employ, is if you have Epidemius in your list to boost the toughness of Nurgle units, you can at least throw a Nurgle Soul Grinder at the unit who is toughness 8, because with the great weapons, they're not rerolling to hit, so they're hitting on 4s thanks to Demon of Nurgle. And then they are wounding on 6s, so you realistically only have to contend with their static combat resolution.
Well,
and that's basically it. Is you're hoping to stall the unit long enough for you to fuck over the rest of the high elves in the list, because you are basically across the board still better than high elves in every respect of the way. Because you, I mean, you're demons. You've got great weapon skills. You've got good strengths. You've got, you know, all of these great benefits towards you. It's only this one unit you have no...
I just want you to... You're looking at me as you talk to me, and I'm like, look at the microphone.
I am making sweet, sweet love to Lang with my eyes.
Joke's on you. I have an erection.
You've been saying that all day.
All day long.
That's because he took Viagra.
It's a real problem. I need to see a doctor.
I was going to say, it has lasted more than 4 hours.
It's my cry for help, guys.
But he's stubborn.
All right.
No, but so, I mean, like, that's the thing. So it's just like, if I personally were to run into Banner of the World Dragon with my army right now, it is...
It's win the lottery, or it's delay it.
Yeah.
Hold the unit up for the entire game.
I don't even try to win the lottery. Fuck the lore of Tzeentch. It's the worst lore in my book.
Exactly.
So for me, it's just like, can I stall it or pull it out of position with redirectors long enough to fuck over the rest of his army and win on victory points? Yes or no. And that's what it comes down to. If he Death Stars it, where it's like 40 white lines with all of his characters, and he's only got 1,000 points of his list elsewhere, I'm fighting for a draw, and I know it.
Yeah.
But, and I think that's why
it's
expecting
Death Star aspect that people are really upset about. Is that
yes?
If you are a decent player and you're like, listen, it's too good, I'm not going to throw it away, but I'm going to put it on a unit where I feel like its utility is going to work really well for me.
15 white lions, 5x3 using martial prowess.
Exactly, right? I think that a unit between 15 and 20 white lions, and you throw it on them, and you walk away with stubborn, martial prowess, all that kind of stuff. I think that nobody's going to hate you for doing that. That unit is just going to be their bane, and they're either going to take some time to tie it up, or they're going to walk away from it. The problem is that when you look at victory conditions for Warhammer, victory conditions for Warhammer are very, very specific about units being utterly destroyed. So if you're just bunkering characters in this massive horde of white lions, or even fucking Lothran Sea Guard or Spearman or some shit, right?
Like, dude, it's Phoenix Guard, because high magic boosts them
up
to
auto
a 3
win.
Up save.
It's an auto win for the high elf player. And it really is, mm-hmm. like you say, at best you can get a draw out of it. And that's kind of a fucked up place to put demon players. Now, demon players have been putting everyone else in a fucked up place for how long?
I don't know. When did Matt Ward write
the
our
smirk,
first
poem? The smirk on your face as you say that.
No, but I mean, like, that's the thing. Is like, I totally get the history of the Demon's Codex. You know, in 7th edition, they were a league of their own. In 8th edition, balanced them somewhat, but there were still games where I won. You know, I won by like 1,200 victory points despite my 25% of my army dimensionally cascading on the right. top of turn one.
Yes.
And so it's just like I'm basically playing 25% of my army down and I still beat you by 1,200 victory points.
Right.
So I totally get that they are capable of things like that. So again, I'm not saying, you know, hey, we don't have, you know, getting, being a demon player and being fucked, you know, karma says we're due, and that's fine. But for me, it's just like, I just look at
it's
and
still
it's
somebody
just
dedicated to painting gems for 2 months?
Yeah. No, but I mean, like, it's just like, when you look at what magical attacks can have, are you saying that a Bretonian player's entire unit of Grail Knights should be useless because I took a 50-point magic banner? Because the Grail Vow confers magical attacks, so now anyone with a Grail Vow cannot hurt you.
Yep.
Should you say that all you know, and I get that the purpose of the banner was make characters obsolete, which is why they specifically say magic spells, magic weapons, and magical attacks, because he's just trying to cover his bases. But to say that an entire army's best case scenario is tie you up and hope that static, hey, now we're both of our phones are ringing.
My phone is muted.
Yeah,
because I remembered to mute it. I even commented about that at the beginning of the goddamn podcast.
Well, you only commented about
it. I threw my phone into my lawn.
You only commented about
and
it.
And I have not mowed that lawn in a while.
It won't bother us.
There is some snow mold. Anyways, I'm
sorry. Are we still talking about pubes or lawn?
Anyways,
all right.
Moving on.
No, but yeah. All right, moving on. Fine.
Moving on. It really does come down to delaying the unit and just keeping it out of the game as long as possible and praying to God that they're not playing a Death Star. However, you know, like, there's still a lot of opportunity to do some damage, and you really have to just pray to God that they break. But you have to win combat first, and you're never going to win combat. Oh, okay. Nice. Thanks. He showed me his phone. But anyways, let's move on to the main topic for today's show.
We didn't
Let's
have
do model of the week. Let's do model of the week. Hey, come on. Listen, guys. Expecting any sort of cohesion in
at
a show
Polynesian,
like this.
On a Polynesian episode.
Polynesian cohesion is the name of this episode.
I drank all my Polynesian. Now I got beer everywhere.
Everyone needed to hear that, so.
I was going
to
say, I love how the mic is pointed right
Guess what,
Kyle,
assholes? So I'm not editing that out.
I went down for the slurp. Let it be known.
All right, so
you also did that this afternoon.
We saw some stuff out of Spartan Games in the last couple of weeks here. They gave people the opportunity to design ships, but kind of in that same area of time, because it's like fathoms, right? So
well, it's like a parsec.
It's a parsec.
Distance and time.
That's right.
All.
It's parsecs. One of the things that we saw out of Spartan Games was that they've released various types of smaller ships. Corvettes, frigates, and things like that that are going to go in with the current breakdown of Firestorm Armada. And having... Did I miss it?
No, I'm just trying to convince you to go click the Firestorm Armada tag on the blog so you'll see what you're looking
oh,
for.
Oh, I don't even know if it's on the blog. I actually think it's only in their shop. Because that was what was weird about this. And that was one of the things I wanted to talk about. And I talked to people during the tournament that I ran. Was that in a lot of cases, what we ended up seeing was that Spartan Games really isn't even putting Firestorm on their blog anymore, which is kind of unfortunate.
Yeah, that was actually because when I get really bored at work, I really just try to do the miniature circuit and look at all the different companies, look at their blogs, do whatever. And the last time that I'd seen something from the Firestorm blog was November. And mm-hmm. I thought that that was really weird because I was pretty sure that Firestorm Armada has been generally successful for Spartan Games. I'm aware of the fact that it is not Dystopian Wars, which has basically become their flagship game.
I think Dystopian Wars is their 40K,
yep.
And Firestorm Armada is their fantasy, where it's totally worth their while.
And Uncharted Seas is their Lord of the Rings. It totally keeps holding up.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, I think it's worth their while to do Firestorm Armada, but every time they do it, they're like, oh yeah, that's good sales. And they do something Dystopian Wars, like, oh, I hit it through the roof. That's fucking fantastic. And, I mean, nothing shows that more that they decided to come out with, they offhandedly said, hey, we're going to do a land battles game for Firestorm Armada. We're going to option it off to some dipshit studio or whatever. It doesn't matter. You've already forgotten who they are. And,
no, you know,
and now they're doing...
It's studio now, dipshit.
And now they're doing the Dystopian
I
Legions,
that was a
which
DJ
is...
for club dipshit.
Dystopian Legions, which is their 28 mil battle mm-hmm. game for Dystopian Wars, the Steamboat game.
Yeah.
and they've turned it into, you know, and, like, it just shows that their level of commitment to Dystopian Wars is super high.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the one you're referring to, the Firestorm Armada one, whose name I can't even remember, was being made by a subsidiary of themselves. Because, I mean, you know, Spartan Games owned this company because it was, like, Spartan Studios or something.
Actually, that's what it was, Spartan Studios.
You know. And they were just like, we've come out with this game. Look at the rules. Look at the two factions. We're totally going to eventually have models for all of the other six. Please buy our stuff.
Promise.
Please,
promise.
Please buy
our
stuff.
Are these two tanks not enough to convince you?
Are you not entertained? Okay, so I think the winners out of the small size ships that we are seeing from Spartan Games for Firestorm Armada is the Dindrenzi Corvette. I think that the Dindrenzi Corvette...
It's like a backwards Cardassian cruiser.
It is almost like a backwards Cardassian cruiser. Actually, what I was going to say is it's actually like a miniature version of their Mark II Dread. Which, and their Mark II Dread looks really, really good.
Yeah,
the problem is like you look at the Dindrenzi frigates, and the Dindrenzi frigates look like fucking shit. They look like those really bad key fobs that go with really expensive cars that have the chips in them. Also,
oh my god,
dicks.
I will never stop seeing that now.
Right.
Thanks.
I think that the Aquan ones also look really nice. But for the most part, like, everything else is pretty true to form. You're not seeing a whole lot of innovation coming out of these ships. The Directorate ones are interesting because apparently they're not corvettes or frigates. They're drones. We don't know what that means yet. We're going to have to wait and see what the rules say about them.
No,
but when you look at the ships, that is basically a small version of a frigate. Like, it's really nothing spectacular.
Now, what I'm curious about, and I think that this bears talking about, is how do you think that Spartan Games is going to release the rules for these models? Because we've actually seen
it. Oh, I know exactly how.
I was going to say, we've seen both methods from them before, where they released Marauders of the Rift just to produce some new rules, as well as, hey, look, here's some new fleets, here's some new game rules for specific ship classes. But we have also seen them Firestorm Armada 2.0, right? Second edition.
Yep.
We have seen them just release shit on their blog. So what I'm curious about is what model are they going to approach? Are they going to try to Games Workshop it, where they're going to nickel and dime their customer base by saying, hey, look, here's a new expansion pack. You're going to spend $25 just to get your hostility class drone rules. Or are they just going to be like, here it is. You know, here is how, you know, drone/corvettes work. And when you buy the pack, we're going to give you the rules card.
Well, I think drones are the ones that stand out here that really do kind of make you wonder how the hell they're going to do the rules. Everything else is either corvette, frigate, and most of these, I believe, are corvettes. And corvette rules are in the rulebook. Like, it's not anything spectacular or anything different or anything like that. And really, it comes down to the MAR rules for these. I think what they're going to say is that the drones are going to count as corvettes. And they're basically just going to have MAR rules that go in along with them that allow you to do this, that, and the other thing. If you read the fluff that goes with the Directorate stuff, it's very specific about these guys have the weapon of boarding torpedoes, and that's pretty much all they do. And boarding torpedoes were already part of the Marauders of the Rift book. So I think they're just going to be...
I'm loving it.
Yes. I think they're just going to be adding in on top of what's already there. But also, Spartan Games has a really good track record for anytime there's a gap, they put a card in the blister pack. And
yeah,
they don't really fuck around with this idea of we're going to give you models, we're not going to be 100% clear on what they do. I think they go to great lengths to make sure that you're getting the information that you need to play the game.
Again, that wasn't my concern, because you're absolutely right. Spartan Games has always included the sort of card, which is such a great little player reference. You know, I mean, when I was walking around the Stormzone Carnage tournament that you were hosted yesterday, basically everyone had their list of cards for all the different ships that they had in front of them, because at the end of the day, it's so much easier and nicer than having a whole rule book set in front of you, set to that page. You know, and again, that's I think one of the failings of the Games Workshop systems is because they have so much unit diversity, here's your closed book, and it's just like, if I need to reference anything, I have to stop, I have to open it up, I have to look, whereas Firestorm Armada has always been, here's your card, put it in front of you,
have a look at it. There's no bookkeeping, so the card system works exceptionally well. Look at War Machine. War Machine's got all the cards, and there's so much bookkeeping going on when you're playing the game, or at least enough, that guys have to lay them out flat on the table, make their deployment zone is actually where they put all their cards and everything like that. Whereas in this game, it's guys just have like cue cards, and it's like, okay, this squad, flip to my next squad, okay, this is what they can do.
Range band three.
Yeah,
okay,
no, exactly. So I think their cards work exceptionally well for that. And I mean, 40K could take lessons, but they don't take lessons from people because they... Just fuck don't.
They are industry leaders, Kyle.
Well, you know.
No, but I mean, listen, for me, I was just curious about, are they going to release these rules, straight up on their blog and just be like, look, when Firestorm Armada 3rd Edition comes out, we will include all of the rules there.
Well, or, you know, actually, I have a quick question for you. The bases. Are those in the Mirage of the Rift, or are those something that they haven't really said anything about?
Bases?
The space stations.
Well, the Syndicate have the option to take one of the larger space stations. However, it is not part of the rulebook. If you go to the civilian models section, there is a bunch of military installation type things, which are similar to the models that I use for the Scenario 3.
They've already released two space stations.
Yes, they have. The space station that they released second is specifically Syndicate.
Yeah, okay. Because that would be the other thing they do, right? Is they, if you look at a lot of the game companies, they do exactly that. Every time, every year, 6 months, whatever, they come up with a book, that has got a little bit of everything for everyone. I mean, I think War Machine only stopped doing that recently.
Yeah. All right, so I think that the best one that we're seeing here so far is the, hi, Dana. Come say hi. No, Kyle's wife says no. All right, so... I think that the Dendrenzi one looks the best. I think that they did a really, really good job for the Corvette. I think that people are going to be subbing Corvettes for their frigates in almost every single situation.
Yeah, I could see that. No, it does look really good. What does the Aquan one look like?
Yeah, the Aquan one looks okay. But the problem is it's kind of this weird middle ground between...
Mark 1 and Mark 2.
The Mark 1 and Mark 2.
But then again, Aquans, I think Aquans as a fleet are the only ones that have suffered this identity crisis. Because basically, every the single fleet...
Snapper class.
...has done...
like the fish.
I'm going to call them flounder. All they do is sing. It's hilarious. No, but I mean, like, every...
there we go.
Under the sea... Under the sea.
Every fleet but Aquans.
Life is better down where it's wetter. Take it from me.
I was going to say, this is turning into the Family Guy one where it just gets funnier the longer you go.
Will not get funnier the longer this goes.
But I mean, every fleet
Are you
other
sure
than
this vortex run is not the vortex of humor?
Yes, it is. Basically, what they've done is they've taken the initial look of that fleet and they have slightly modified it and made it, you know, kind of improved upon it. So it's just like the Dendrenzi look more Dendrenzi, however, a little more stylized with all of their Mark II ships. The Aquans are the only fleet out there where they took a radical shift in aesthetic.
But
so
that's
all
kind of
the
Aquan like norm. They're always taking radical
they've
shifts.
They've always
with
been
the
radicals.
Kind of. No, but I mean, like, basically, because, like, they,
I just
they
like
had...
how I shut you down. Every
yeah,
time.
I know. They
it's
had...
all these non sequiturs.
They had their basic look for all of the Mark I stuff. Then they released the Dreadnought, which was radically different. Basically,
yeah, yeah,
the Dreadnought does not fit the aesthetic of the Aquans, unlike every other army's Dreadnought, which really is just kind of a bigger, better version of what they have. But
yeah,
to, in
but
my
that,
opinion,
the Dreadnought shows when they discovered 4chan. And the Aquans dug
what,
it.
Yeah,
no,
I was gonna say one of the guys just loves
they were talk. Really, really into it.
No, but I mean, like, that's the thing is, like, no one, like, everyone you talk to that does play Firestorm Armada looks at the Aquan Dreadnought and says they hit it out of the park because it is still one of the best models Spartan Games has ever produced for Firestorm Armada. And it was at that moment. Oh, you're chewing your gin cherries, huh? It was at that moment.
I chewed my gin cherries a while ago.
I know. It was at that moment where they looked at it and they were like, holy shit, everything we've done up to this moment has been wrong. And since then, all of the Mark II Aquan ships have been matching the aesthetic brought forward by the Dreadnought. So I find it interesting that we see these Corvettes, and you're absolutely right. They are basically a mixture of the Mark I and Mark II, because I think what Spartan Games is trying to do is recognize the fact that they've completely upended the fleet aesthetic. And they're trying to create that sort of distinction. I mean, it's like when you know someone, and then you meet their sister, and you're like, you don't look anything alike. And then
but I date you all the same.
Totally friends with benefits. Look, you know, it's totally fine. No, but and then you meet like a third family relative that's like the link that bridges everything. Where, oh, dude, I still have fucking.
You put it off to the side like you would stop drinking, and now
no.
I've spilt port all over my battery.
I was going to say, all I did was put it to the side so that when my hand talking happened, I wouldn't throw fucking Polynesian punch all over your laptop.
Fine.
You just spilled port all over the table, though. That's your fault. He's literally licking it off.
Is he
of
going down for the slurp?
He is licking it off of particle board.
All the splinters. I remember you used to play bass for licking off the particle. Never mind.
Excuse me, didn't you play drums for licking it off the particle board?
It was the one time I played drums. Or was I lead vocals? Anyways. Yeah, I think that you are right there when it comes to the aesthetic for this particular model. You know, Aquans always have been the shifting aesthetic. I mean, it's you kind of grab the stuff that you like, and you have so many options that you're great, right? Like, one of the problems with Directorate is that if you don't like the Directorate look, too fucking bad, because
go fuck yourself,
everything
that's why.
Is the look. Right, and I think that that's kind of where
no,
it comes down
to. They trade it up, because instead of the spaceships that are ovals, they give you the perfect circle that is your carrier.
A perfect storm of perfect circles. Anyways.
No, but you're absolutely right, though. And even with Dindrenzi, I mean, basically, every single ship is the cock ship. And it's just like, you've got big cocks, you've got little cocks, so you've got cocks.
It's pronounced cockpit.
You have cockpits.
I used but to play bass for Pit of Cocks.
I was going to say, the pit is silent is the problem.
All right.
Anyways.
Stop. We're going to move on to the main topic for today's show, which, oddly enough, is still Firestorm Armada. But we're going to talk a little
lucky
bit.
Lucky you.
Yeah, I was going to say, wow, let's get us off the Firestorm Armada talk so we can talk more about.
Well, what would you like to talk about?
I don't know. I'm drunk.
I would love to talk about Firestorm Armada.
All right. Stop hitting your can on the table.
Actually, I did that for reference so they would all know what that noise was.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I'm helpful that way.
Anyways, finish your Polynesian punch, goddammit. All right, so I ran a Firestorm Armada tournament this weekend. It was Storm Zone Carnage Part 2. We ended up having a really good time. We had the same guy win two times in a row, Bradford. He won with RSN. Which I think, you know, I think I want to kind of talk a little bit about balance, and
I would argue that this tournament was the revenge of the RSN. How many RSN players do we have? We had 10 guys show up.
Okay, so we had one RSN. We had one RSN player show up, have to leave due to injuries to his mother, and was replaced by another RSN player.
And then we
had four total, with two Xenian League, which had RSN, with a Dindrenzi that also had RSN allies involved in it. So there was a lot of RSN. I was going to say about half the players had RSN in their fleet somewhere. And, you know, like, I absolutely understand it. I think that the models are fantastic. I think that the rules are very good. And I think that Spartan Games really does realize that they're the ones that have caught the imaginations of people. And I mean, you remember back when we talked about this fleet as being very anime. They had a very anime look to them. I think that people are really, really latching onto that. And the fact that they keep putting models out for it shows.
Well, you know, and I think to pull a really... Sure, I'll have port cherries.
That's what I'm doing.
Ooh. I was going to say, to pull it towards a Games Workshop analogy, you know, it's like the Tau. When the Tau came out, the Tau sold like fucking gangbusters because they were this unique aesthetic that people loved. They loved the look of stuff for the Tau list. They sold everywhere.
And then they threw out all their records of how much they sold.
And then they were just like, Dark Angels only sold two of the DJ booths, so we'll only produce a Riptide, and that should do the global demand.
Well, it's not Marine, so they'll sell half as much, right? Come on. But anyways.
But I mean, I think the comparison does hold true of RSN, because absolutely, RSN ships are gorgeous. You know, the lines, the looks, the designs, everything about the RSN looks really, really sharp. And I think that it is something that has captured the imaginations of a lot of players, especially because of the fact that RSN can be allied into so many different forces. So you don't have to just take,
you're right about that.
Yeah, it's not like Indrenzi, or it's not like
Unlike Alliance of Kurok, that does not have one specific race in Alliance of Kurok that stands out as being the one that you can build an entire fucking fleet around. RSN have tons of options. Just the fact that they have a heavy cruiser makes them stand out against every other option when it comes to allies.
And you know, I think it's also because from a retailing point of view, you actually get what the ships look like when you look at the package.
Mm-hmm.
Like seriously, guys can look at the stuff, they, you know, check things out, and they go, oh, this looks really cool. They buy it, they put it together, it's even better than it looked. Everything in Alliance of Kurok, you look and you're like, what the fuck is going on in here? You see a picture,
Zalokian.
You see a picture on the internet, then you're like, oh, okay, that looks kind of cool.
I guess.
Yeah. And,
Dude, it's like looking
but
at the blister
RSN, pack. You look at you like, yeah, I'd buy that shit, right? It's, I'll buy three. Thank you very much.
It's like looking at the blister pack of the Aquan Dreadnought where you're
all right,
just
Terry's
like,
bringing us alcohol and beer. We're loaded. Scott, get over here! Scott! Scott Martin, frequent host of the show, has now walked into the studio. This is our offsite studio. So Scott was one of the people who played Aquans, and because we have Aquans up here on the screen, Scott, talk a little bit about the Corvettes and where you feel like they're going to fit into your massive fucking douchebag mind fleet.
Well, let's
get it on the mic.
Here.
Get on
okay.
the mic.
Okay, let's get on the mic here.
Just sit on it.
So, from what I heard from the Corvettes and seeing what's going on with them, it's I don't know. Like they kind of fit that part of the
frigates. That's what we all say. It was like, ah, it's okay.
It's
but...
okay. It's kind of a mix between the aesthetic of like the Medusa and the aesthetic of the seashells.
You know, it looks
yes.
like
and that's what's weird about it.
It looks like they're destroyers.
Yeah, like, and it definitely comes down to like a rule set, right? You're like, oh, well, I'm gonna swap them out for the frigates. Am I gonna swap them out for like maybe not take them to destroyers for something? But it's like it's
well, okay. Now you play Aquans, and you played them relatively well with Mark II cruisers and with Mark II. Just Mark II cruisers and heavy cruisers.
Yes,
you were playing a hardcore mine build, which actually was hilarious the entire tournament. However, I think the interesting thing is you only took one squad of the standard seashell frigates because they're not the greatest frigates in the game. They really do fall off in a lot of cases. Their escorts, their mine escorts are amazing, but the frigates are so weird. Do you feel like these are going to replace the small class for your Aquan fleet?
Yes, I definitely do. Like, the escorts are awesome. They fill that, definitely that huge role for laying that field of mines.
Talk fucking loud, because we decided
right,
we're going to yell.
Okay, we got it. Yeah, we're... The alcohol consumption shall be going out as
did you see the punch bowl?
Yes,
I did. That punch bowl was full. That punch bowl was full.
I think they're good. Like, because the biggest problem right now with the Mark 1s and the Mark 2 frigates are the same points, and the Mark 2s are just they have that little bit more punch,
well,
right?
Yeah, why would you take Mark 1?
So why? I took them because that's the only models I had at the point in time, so yeah. But no, I definitely think that these are going to be the new replacements. So either they're going to take the Mark IIs or the Corvettes, and the Mark Ones will just be phased out.
I think the Mark Ones will definitely be phased out. What are you drinking?
I'm drinking some Strongbow at the moment, and then I'm going to hook it up with some Granville Island.
Hey, there it is. All right, so I think what's interesting, I'm actually holding the microphone now for anybody who hears my hand jostling it. If you ever want an awkward hand job, Lang's your man. But really, I think...
He's handy.
He's handy. Thanks. Wow. Wow. I think that the Aquan ones stand out. Let's talk a little bit. We got a lot of people here, so I'm literally going to hold this like I'm goddamn Bob Barker. So let me just go ahead and hold this thing here. All right. So yeah, I'm Bob Barkering this shit. We did the Firestorm Armada tournament. I think everyone had a lot of fun. One of the things that you had talked about, Scott, was that you felt like you really needed to get a couple of extra games in to feel how the scenarios. Now, one of the things that I did with the scenarios was I made sure that outside of one, all of them were actually just rulebook rules, star orders, all that kind of stuff. Nathan almost just fell over. How do you feel about second edition and the way that the star orders are working right now on a tournament level?
I'm really digging it, actually. It gives you, I don't know if the star orders and everything else were included into the actual tactical points.
No. There's no tactics points anymore. They don't exist in second edition.
Okay. So then it was just but the Star Orders are really good and complicated at the same time because it allows you to play just a straight up game, but you know you can get that definite win if you manage to hit certain objectives, right? And it makes it way more tactical.
Depending on the fleet that you're playing against.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? And especially with the FSD rules going in and then the ability to shunt out, so then you really have to figure out if you have to hunt that unit down to try and get that extra win, or do you just focus on what your game plan from the beginning is, right? And that was a huge issue for a lot of guys, because they're like, you know, I can get this all-out win if I do this, and this, but my opponent's going to screw me, or I got to, like, just play my regular game and see what I can do. And that's how I played it. I just played up my straight-up game, mined the crap out of the whole field, and... You know,
half the table was mines.
It was
fucking hilarious. Half the table was mines, and basically what Scott did with his Aquans was he boxed his opponent into like a basically 2 foot by 2 foot square, and that was all he could do because they did not want to fly through the minefield. I think the most mines you had on a table I counted was in round two, you had over 57 mines on the table by turn three. It was fucking retarded. But I think that that's very interesting, because when we talk about starters in Firestorm Armada on a tournament level, one of the things that Scott West had run into with his Syndicate fleet was that in round three, he was one of the guys who was top table. I think he was only a point behind the winner. He ended up best general. However, the reason why he ended up best general as opposed to best overall was because his opponent decided to shunt his Dindrenzi Dreadnought off the table turn one. Because he just decided that he needed to start mitigating his losses. And a crushing defeat was terrible compared to a major loss. And Scott was a little bit put off by that because, again, his perspective on it was it's not something he has any sort of control over. However, I feel like that's a huge part of the game.
I was like, why won't you fight me?
And oh, absolutely. He was like calling the guy a bitch for standing on holy ground. That was all that came down to.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, there are games, you know, anytime when you're looking at it, I mean, this is a tournament. I want as many points as I can possibly get. And there are times when I will line up and I'll just be like, oh, I can't win. All right, let's mitigate this loss. I'm going to do everything I possibly can.
That's what I like about the game is it rewards that. Like, Warhammer does not. Warhammer rewards you playing like you got a pair.
What is this, War Machine? I don't know. No, but I mean, and that's exactly it. So it's just like, if I looked at it and I was just like, I'm fucking outgunned. I'm outgunned. He's faster than me. He's got more shots than me. You know, his based on his deployment, the best I can hope to do is a minor loss. So I'm just going to mitigate points right off the bat. And I do like the fact that Firestorm Armada has that opportunity. So to Scott West's opponent, I just have to say kudos. You know, it's...
He came in last.
Nice.
No. And I mean, you know, I think Scott Rene did actually a pretty good job with his fleet. He learned a lot during that tournament, which I think for Dindrenzi is actually an uphill battle. Because Dindrenzi are the ones that feel like they're the clear winner, and then you get them on the table a couple times, and you're like, why is this not working? And then you eventually figure it out.
Look, you know, and as someone who does play Dindrenzi, it is one of those things where it's just like, if your opponent is kind enough to sit in range band 2 in your fixed forward arc, you are going to fuck them over because there is nothing they can do against that. But inherently, I find the problem with the Dindrenzi is all of their firepower is fixed forward. So I have one phenomenal turn where my movement has gotten me into the perfect positions and then I fly through it.
Well, and I think that's a huge thing is that they actually seem like the clear heads and tails type winner. One of the things that Scott and I were talking about was Cerulean's, because Cerulean's are one of those fleets that, yeah, there's a fair amount of fixed forward happening there, but they kind of mitigate it with their port and starboard, and because their fucking frigates are so damn good, it's hard to picture that fleet being a whole lot of anything else other than their torpedo cruisers and their standard frigates and their standard cruisers, because their capital ships are balls. Like, they're fucking terrible.
Yeah, like, their battleship falls short unless you're like
in like every goddamn
you're just
situation.
Like, you're like, oh, like the only time you're like, is there, you manage to like cross that T with range band one and get the magic shot, and then like in the aft of somebody.
I used to play bass for the magic shot.
Like, you just
wasn't that
it's like
the gay porn like, you starred in.
Yeah, and then,
yep.
Yeah. And then it's like, and then you just have to get that, you know, like cascading sixes, come on, and like, you know, clickety clack, roll those bones. And then, yeah, other than that, you're better off to go with just the cruiser, small ship spam, and then maybe take that one dreadnought with the impervious so you got somewhere to throw your ass, Star Admiral. Even then, it's just, yeah.
Well, I don't know about that, like, because really, James, who I think is probably the most successful person I've ever seen playing Cerulean's.
Yes.
Is he? One of his big things is he maxes out, goes crazy on the small ships, the frigates. He goes crazy on the cruisers. He does take the torpedo cruisers because they're really fucking good for what they do. But really, he only takes the Mark II carrier to put his Star Admiral on. And then if your opponent rolls up an order, I burped just now. Yeah, actually, if your opponent rolls up a Star Order that is specifically to kill the Star Admiral, first thing he does is shunt. Because the guy does not want you to get your Star Order. And I think that that's one of the huge things about Firestorm Armada. And I think in the tournament scene, one of the things that you're going to see is that your opponent is almost always going to throw away between 200 and 300 points to make sure that no matter how bad his dice are, he can never lose to the point where he's only getting next to nothing for points. You know, the way that I ended up doing this tournament was same as last time, which was 20 points total. So if you got a crushing victory over to your opponent, which you can only get from a Star Order, is it's 18 points for you, 2 points for your opponent. But that point spread, based on the idea that people were denying the massive victory in most games, unless they were gunning for it themselves, that is what separated the two guys at the top from the rest of the field. Because the two guys at the top went hard the entire time and got fucking lucky. I mean, Bradford knows he got lucky. Scott knows he got lucky. There were things working there in their direction. However, it's one of those things that you're either going to go all out and hope to God it pays out for you, or you're just going to mitigate your losses the entire way through the tournament. And I think that's what kind of what's interesting about Firestorm Armada. It looks like you had something to say, Kyle. Never mind.
Yeah, it is definitely an interesting aspect of it, is that you can, you're basically going in there, you're playing for a draw. And then whatever else you can kind of
really?
Magic out. Yeah, because that's exactly what you're looking at. You're looking at, trying to get the Star Order.
You're right, because you're playing both sides of that. You're making sure you mitigate whatever you're going to lose, at the same time trying to get as much as you can.
Well, I think it resembles real life in the sense that if you ever lose like a cruiser or a frigate in real life in a naval battle, the first thing they do is, why the fuck didn't you retreat?
Yeah.
How is it that you're such an idiot that you didn't know that this was a fight you couldn't win? And I think Firestorm Armada reflects that.
Yeah, and that's kind of why I draw the comparisons with Warhammer, because Warhammer's like, no, you should be going all aggressive all the time. Fuck your loss. Just go, 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 go. And this game gives you the option of like, well, you know, if it doesn't look like you're going to win, you can make it so he doesn't win as good.
Yes.
And like, it's in your power to make sure he doesn't win as well. And that's not by punching him in the face or pee. It's just by getting out of there.
And yeah, very much so, as it gives you the option to have that tactical retreat. Like, and it's not a bad thing for you. Like, in Warhammer, is totally where it's like, if you're going to flee, you roll those two dice, and if they catch you, you're done. Whereas this is like, and especially with my Aquan fleet, where my fore and my aft are actually very damaging and my starboards don't work, is I can go in there, drop some mines, and then do that runaway tag game and be like, all right, yeah, you got to come after me. It's going to cost you, like, points to come and try and get me.
Well, compare that to Warhammer, right? Like, you and I played in Onslaught recently, and you're a terrible matchup for me in my vampire counts. I can't turn around and play that game in Warhammer. In Warhammer, if you get matched up, if you lose rock, paper, scissors, you're fucked.
Yeah.
And that's all it comes down to. Whereas Firestorm Armada, if you get a built, or if you build your list and you get thrown up against a list that's built to counter yours, you have the option of pulling that draw. You have the option of being smart, unless you're Jason and you never folding space and shunt the fuck out. Jason refuses to folding space drive out of combat.
That's
he will fight till the death.
That is because only bitches fold space and shunt out of combat.
No, bitches fold space. I think that's... I did not play base for them. It was just called only bitches. Okay, so I'm going to stop us here. I think it's interesting to talk about Firestorm Armada. I don't think a lot of people who listen to the show play a lot of Firestorm Armada. I would recommend it. I feel like you're not going to be paying a whole lot to get a fleet together and have some games. And I think the way that it's exploded here in Country Stan, it's one of those things that you have to appreciate to a certain level.
Well, I think people are realizing it's a great second thing to get into. To get into the game with owning nothing to having a fleet that's good for a tournament is less than half an army of Warhammer. And that's why guys are really digging it. It costs less than buying allies for your army to basically get a whole second game that's complete and tournament level. And that way, when you're tired of playing more Warhammer, the answer is not, I will play more Warhammer because I'm tired of this. It's, I'll play this totally different game.
Or I'll start a new fucking army.
Yeah, that's what I mean, right? It's just, we see that with guys in 40K all the time. Oh, I'm sick of my Space Wolves. How about I start...
Blood Angels.
Because
they're so much different.
All right, so we all saw Star Trek Into Darkness this weekend because it's something shiny and I feel like we need to fucking talk about it. I'm also drunk, and I don't know if I can necessarily go on. Oh, did you just climax there, Nathan?
Yeah, just thinking about Into Darkness again, I came because the movie is fucking...
I think all of us agree that the movie is fucking 2 hours and 20 minutes of fucking genius.
Yeah.
It is super, super fast-paced, and I think that that's the only thing that's going to work against it in terms of, like, rewatchability, is that it's so fast-paced that, like, they kind of do a lot of cutaways where you're just like, wait, was that the end of the conversation? But, like, it was the end of the conversation in terms of getting a movie on there. But I thought that the twists were really, really fun. Like, I thought that they flipped a lot of things, and when I say flipped, like, legitimately they flipped things. And it was fun. It was entertaining. Nathan was really loud during the movie. laughing.
Oh, yeah.
It was all the cum.
Oh, was he ever.
it was like, well, oh, there's Nathan, yeah, and there's Nathan again. Oh, and oh, there's Nathan again.
Nathan was the only guy clapping like this. Ha! That was what Nathan was doing during the movie, him
like
and his wife.
He was stopping all the guys who were bootlegging the movie to sell on the internet.
Well, Nathan is a natural deterrent. He's a cock block when it comes to downloading movies.
Well, like I said, someone has to do it. I mean, it, you know.
Someone's got to save the movie industry.
Otherwise, the pirates win.
Yeah. I got nothing more to add to that.
Wow, okay. So, really, I know that we're slightly short right now, but A, one of the wives is yelling at us to cook food. And B, I don't know how much more we can talk about this, considering the fact that Nathan is hardly standing, and I'm having a hard time deciding whether or not my legs work right now.
Say, you're only saying that because I almost fell over once.
Also true. So, okay, let's talk a little bit one last time about the tournament here. Firestorm Armada. We've only seen so much of it in Alberta, and I say that because I'm the only one running in Alberta right now. But Scott, from somebody who played in the tournament, and Kyle, somebody who was kind of watching from the outside in, do you feel like Firestorm Armada works on a tournament level?
Most definitely, because it allows a huge, huge dispersity of forces. It allows you to the points system or the points level that you decided on allows you to take whatever you think works best for you, your style of play,
and a little bit more.
Yeah, and a little bit more. Like it was a little bit more extra. It was, you know, a rough patch for my first game getting back into the game itself. But it definitely allowed the dispersity between the armies, even though there was quite a few of the RSN fleets in the tournament. However, there was a difference between each kind of fleet, and then they each played it totally different.
Well, I think since we had four RSN fleets with other people with RSN allies, but none of them were really the same fleet.
No, they weren't the same fleet, and they all play them totally differently. Like, it was just a night and day. Like, you play one guy, and you're like, oh, okay, this is how I'm going to have to play it, and you go up against, play against Alam, and Alam was like, oh, ball's out, he's going to fly right through into my minefield. I'm like, oh my god, like, this does not work.
Alam flew right through your goddamn minefield like it wasn't even there. And he was the luckiest motherfucker because the mines did so much more damage to you than it did to him.
Oh yeah, the cascading sixes definitely worked in his favor, and I destroyed more of my ships than he did of his. And then his battleships just kind of shunted it off and was like, we're good. But yeah, it was definitely a different feel for each army, and I think it definitely works out for a tournament system. And yeah, just allowing that diversity. Is really great. So once the new model ranges come out, I think that'll even more of a diversity between the fleets and the playstyles.
Yeah, one of the things that I talked about after the tournament to everyone who was involved was that I'm not 100% sure if I'm going to run another one in the fall like I had done before, because really I felt like we were waiting around for those releases to happen, and I think that that's hugely important for that game. But more than likely I will be running more. I mean, I every time I run one of these tournaments, I have a hell of a fun time and everyone enjoys themselves, and seeing like 10 or 12 people playing that game at a time, you really just, you start to realize how genius the game is in a lot of ways. But yeah, Nathan.
Well, I was just going to ask Scott a question, because I think you're the only person who has played in both a Warhammer and a Firestorm Armada tournament in the last month. If there was a single tournament running both game systems, what would you play?
Tough call, actually.
Stop being a bitch.
No, it really, because this was the year that I was like, no, I'm playing tournaments. I'm playing as many tournaments as I can. I got the time available, and I'm just doing it. I'm just playing every tournament I can. And unfortunately, I was going to go to another tournament next week. Unfortunately, some stuff came up, so I can't make it. But yeah, it was like I just want to get as many tournaments in as possible. But I like the break, like having the break from Firestorm into any of the GW tournaments and back and forth. But the big thing is with Firestorm right at this point in time is that there's not a whole lot of people into it, and yeah, like you get that diversity into fantasy, but I definitely do like the Firestorm tournament. Like it was fun.
Well, I think what I'm fishing for is, because I mean, you yourself have said that Firestorm makes a good tournament game, and I have to agree, because there are things that a general can do to help, mitigate a loss. You know, things are happening where it's just like, right, I'm just going to shut my whole fleet. All you get is half of what's left and what you destroyed. You know, so it's just like, as a player in a tournament, I have options that I can do. Whereas, again, you know, in a lot of times, specifically with new Warhammer books as well as pretty much the entire game of 40K, the outcome is determined on them pairing. And that's why I was curious what your take was.
Well, it's the rock, paper, scissors, right?
Yeah, it's absolutely rock, paper, scissors. 40K is horrible for it right now. So that's what I was going to say. You know, it's just like, you know, and even new fantasy books are starting to get that way. I mean, we literally talked at the beginning of this episode about how I, as a demon player, the best thing I can do against, you know, and I'm the second newest book. The only thing I can do against the newest book is hope I can cock block them long enough to pull out a draw. And that the unit that I try to stall up their Banner of the World Dragon with doesn't pop from instability. I'm just going to try to talk long. Yeah. So, like, shoulder is just, like, dying over here because he's
not reaching my good hand.
Well, that's because you haven't masturbated enough to make it your good hand.
I haven't been playing the stranger as much as possible. Okay, I'm going to cut you off here.
Wow, everyone's phone is ringing.
I don't think anybody's phone has not rung during this podcast.
Scott's is not still in the line.
All right, so, Kyle.
Wait, going back to Scott, what is the best tournament game? What is the
best tournament by far right now is the Firestorm Armada, just because it's not about the what you're playing, it's about who you're playing. And that's where I find it is it's definitely the higher...
Do you feel like it's smarter?
Yes, it does. It takes some sort of intelligence and some sort of... level of understanding of what you need to do and what you need to accomplish and what the other person needs to accomplish from you, right? Is it definitely like, you know, you're comparing stuff like, you know, it's like comparing WWF to World War II where you're like, you know, I'm playing Patton or I'm playing...
I was going to say, that one went really far away.
Or I'm The Rock, right? The Rock just wants to come out and kick some ass, you know, the jabronis, where, you know, he had Patton where it was like, yeah, boom, boom, boom. He knows the tactics. Knows
like
the tactics.
How Matt Damon plays or how everyone else plays.
Yes, right? Or, you know, it's very much you're playing more competitive. Or not so much competitive, but more of a tactical game, and you're learning and going as you were. Whereas, and it's more of a dice for the differences. The dice do play a huge part to it, but in Fantasy or 40K, like you can get that one draw,
you're
and
you're slave to the dice, right?
Yeah, right. And in Fantasy or 40K, it's you know, if you get that one lucky draw against a certain guy, he's pooched, like, and you're just like, yeah, I chalk this weapon as a win. It's in my pocket, you know. Move on to the next game, where the other one is, no, I have to play this tactically, because if he comes in for a certain, you know, gets a certain roll or gets a certain score against you, that's it. Like, he, you know, he's got you against the ropes and you need to shunt out or you need to do something else. There's you have to play that tactical game.
Well, okay, so here's what comes down to the listener question for this week, and it's not specifically Firestorm Armada, but it is something that I feel is important. One of the things here that we ran into when we were running the Firestorm Armada tournament was that one of the players was playing against an opponent who shunted his Dreadnought out on the first turn, which is basically a quarter of his list, in order to stop his opponent from getting the largest defeat that he could possibly get. Now, I think that it's very interesting, because one of the things that this person had said to me was that they were not happy about the idea that they had no control over the fact that they were going to be able to get this result. Jason, get the fuck over here. John Kingsway's here. John Kingsway, who we've talked about many times on the podcast. No, you're going to put that dick in your mouth later. Yeah. So, John Kingsway, what we would like to ask you is, with regards to Firestorm Armada, do you think that it is fair to be completely out of control, like you have no control over to the fact that your opponent is shunting out ships on the first turn that are part of your Star Order? Do you think that's fair? Because this is our listener poll for this week. So tell us, do you think it's fair? Do you feel like it's just part of the game?
Actually, I think it should be a minimum of like turn two starting.
Interesting. Okay, so why do you think that turn two is where that's going to... You think just because it's going to give your opponent the opportunity to somehow stop you?
Correct.
And that's really what it comes down to. So John Kingsway, a man of few words and a man of lots of dicks in his mouth, says he loves the hot meat between his cheeks. No, but expand on that. We're fucking recording, for God's sakes. Do you think it's fair for somebody to shunt out a Dreadnought on turn one, which means you have one turn to board it and kill it?
No, it's not. It's kind of a cheap move.
You feel like it's a cheap move just saying that you're forcing them to downgrade their level of win from crushing to major. In my tournament, it was a 2-point difference in my tournament.
Well, I mean, you are asking the person who refuses to shunt any ship ever because it's unfair, so I don't really think that this is the best tactic. Yeah,
John Kingsway says shunting is for pussies.
Yes. I know what I see for it is that it mitigates that you can't get that crushing defeat, but he's losing that 200 points, and now you can put the stomp on him.
It's a win. It's a win. You're basically handing your opponent a win, but it's not the best win he could get.
No. That's what I was going to say. You're already admitting defeat at that, but you're like, you know what? My goose is cooked. I'm going to make it so that I'm not... Like, it's not a major disaster. It's just going to be bad and I lose.
I think knowing the difference is very smart.
Well, but I mean, what I find interesting is this is Firestorm Armada. This isn't Warhammer 40,000 and to a much lesser extent Warhammer, where based on matchup and deployment, I can say I've lost this game. You know, and I have had games like that in 40K, and I've had games like that in Fantasy where it's just like I've deployed, I've looked at both armies, and I've just been like, okay, there's no way I can lose. I'm gonna win. I'm gonna win every fight because he's matched up, you know, perfect with me. Or holy shit, I cannot deal with 14 Chimeras. There's nothing I can do against this.
Okay,
but hold on. I was going to say, this is Firestorm Armada, so I find that, yes, I can shunt on the top of turn one, where I'm basically saying, I will lose this game, but I'm not going to lose by a massacre, but I really think that it's a fucking stupid thing to do, because being Firestorm Armada, this is a game that is one off of movement and range bands. How am I going to activate my ships?
That's what I was going to say. It also matters in activation order. If you're playing the game like you know how to play, you know that there's not just my list versus your list. It's a whole lot of... Depends on when he activates his ships. When I activate my ships, I can pull an uneven match just by knowing which guys to activate each turn.
Well, I think what's funny is that shunting is a three-turn process. It's not something that you do willy-nilly. It's something that you do out of desperation, and you need to be able to figure out when the fuck you're supposed to shunt your ships. And most of the time, it's when you're unsure whether you need to shunt them, because when it's too late, it's too fucking late. And I feel like that's something that Warhammer desperately needs, because... You know, like you had said, Nathan, you had specifically said that, yeah, you're going to get paired up with a guy who you know you're going to fucking ass beat him, and you're going to take him to pieces, and you're going to pull him apart. If he were to do something like that where he's just like, right, I'm going to run my Death Star off the table and you're only ever going to get half points for them, like, do you feel like that's unfair? Like, that's the big question.
No, I don't, because, again, he's handing me a win. So even though I'm looking at it and I'm just like, you know, if everything happens how it should, I will win this game and I'm going to get max points and I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But if he, you know, looks at the situation and says, fuck, I can't win, you know, his bloodletters are going to tear through my Savage Orcs, his plague bearers are going to tie up my goblins and then eventually kill him, you know, there's nothing I can do. I can at the very least try to mitigate my loss a little bit. Yes, I'm handing him the game, but I'm basically trying to save my own tournament score. And I find that having mechanics like that is very, very interesting. And to go back to what Kyle said, what makes Firestorm Armada a very interesting game is, again, even if I look at it and say, holy shit, this is an uphill battle, if he activates the wrong ship in the wrong order and he moves that dreadnought up where it's just like, holy shit, I've got two free activations because he's out.
About targets of opportunity.
And that's exactly it. It's just like, he's out of activations. I've got my heavy cruisers and my dreadnought left. I'm going to move up. They're going to be an optimal range band, and I'm going to fuck that ship in its face. You know, and it's just like, and that's to me what I find Firestorm Armada, you know, as a game becomes more than just, this is the list I'm playing, this is the list you're playing, this is how we've
luck
deployed.
Draw,
yeah, exactly. It's not luck of the draw. It's not rock, paper, scissors, because even if I'm rock and you're paper, if you fuck up, I can punish you for that mistake, unlike games of Warhammer.
Yeah, and I think that that's a huge part of it, because having the opportunity to walk away from a fight that you know is really bad for you is something that we haven't seen. But what I think is funny about it is that really veteran players, and especially when I say veteran players, I mean like, you know, Games Workshop Warhammer type players like Scott here, it's hard to look at your fleet and say, this is a bad matchup for me, I'm going to walk away from this table. Also, because the games take so long to play, it's a strange sort of like deal you're brokering with your opponent where you're trying not to piss them off at the same time.
Oh, definitely. It's part of that thing, but it's definitely like the activation phase is huge. The cards are huge. So you're playing that tactical game against somebody else, right? And you're playing that, you know, if I do this, this is what you're going to do, or you're going to do this and I do this. So it really comes down, and that's exactly how I played it against the other guys that were shunting. If they're going to shunt out, okay, I'm mining this one whole side of the fleet, and now I'm putting everything in or flying around to the other side, swinging around. If you want to shunt, shunt right ahead, because you're going to fly right into my range band too, and I'm going to knock it out.
Well, that was three turns in a row where you basically boxed people in using the rules. And I think that that's what's so funny about this, is there are things built into the rules that if you're aggressive and you know that this is something your opponent is trying to do,
you can be similarly aggressive in terms of stopping them or really, really making them pay for it. Now, John, you had played a RSN fleet that was basically a mix of RSN and Zen. It was a Zenian League fleet, right? And did you ever run into a situation where you felt like you were up against the a list that was like an automatic loss for your fleet?
I think so, yes.
Which fleet was that?
Actually, the first game, actually.
Which fleet was that?
Is any, well, RSN pure.
RSN. And I mean, and that's kind of the funny thing, and that was what I was getting at, is that there are fleets that actually are able to be built in such a way that they can deal with most of the stuff coming in their direction. Like, you would mine the shit out of two RSN fleets, and you still lost both of those games, Scott.
Yes and no. I did more damage to myself for both of those games, actually, than they did.
It was the mines.
Well, the one,
it a mine.
I pulled away their satisfaction.
Well,
a mine.
Yes.
I pulled out, and then she was like, "You know, I pulled out," and then she's like, "I have syphilis," and I was like, "Do am I still winning?"
No, the first game actually.
If you came, you're always winning.
Well, the first game I actually had a draw, and the only thing reason I lost was it because I lost the fact of taking the artifact, and I chose to be the attacker instead of the defender. That was a huge mistake for my own self, because if I was the defender, he was in a whole world of hurt because I just mined him, and then he would have to come get the artifact himself.
That would have been hilarious.
Yeah, at that point he would have just been done it.
Asshole.
Yeah, he had to try and get the objective, which makes or breaks the game, right? Or makes or breaks the win. And that's what it was, because I fought him straight up with being Aquins as an attacker and brought it to a draw. Like, we were drawed straight up, and then it came to the one. He got the one up on me because he still held.
It was
the
a special yet. Scenario.
Yeah, it was a special scenario. And then the other one I did, it was. I had Alum on the ropes. He was hurting. The only difference is that he flew his battleship up and chain reacted all my mines, and I did more damage to myself than he did. And he's even admitted it. He's like, I didn't win the game. I lost the game because I mined everything and my mines destroyed more of my fleet than he did. He said he was in trouble, and he just managed to push that battleship in, make that commitment, and let everything else blow up. And you know, those sixes killed the crap out of my ships.
Did you have a fun time with Firestorm for that weekend?
Oh, phenomenal. Like, the way I mined the field and everybody was just having a blast doing it.
There were people begging me not to pair them up with Scott. They were like, can I not play the Aquin Mine Fleet? It was hilarious. And then I ended up pairing them up with that person. Jeff got fucked by it. John, how did you feel about it?
It was a lot of fun. Fuck your black hole.
Fuck the black hole. The black hole is the most amazing scenario ever. All right, so we're running a little bit long here, but I think that for a ridiculously drunk episode of, like, the three of us wavering back and forth and having two people suddenly show up midway through, I think we had a fun time. So, the question again for anybody who missed it is, do you feel like it is unfair to be completely or have something happen that is completely out of your control that mitigates your opponent's loss? That's the question we want you guys to answer, yes or no. I'll be putting that up on jadedgamercast.com. Thanks very much. That has been Jaded Gamercast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Nathan.
Kyle.
Bah. Scott.
Have a good one.
Cheers.
Fuck you.
Cheers.